Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're gonna be doing something a little different.
Oh.
Yeah, we're diving into this unfinished novel by Jack Smith called Amor Fati.
Interesting.
Yeah, and we've only got these excerpts from what seems to be an early draft.
Okay.
And we're gonna try to put the pieces together and figure out what happens to Frederick Weber.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it's kind of like we're literary detectives, you know, trying to crack the case of this unfinished narrative.
So we're working with raw material here.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. It's almost like we're getting a glimpse into the author's mind.
Right.
You know, seeing how the story develops in its early stages.
Exactly. So let's just jump right in.
Okay.
So first, we meet Frederick Weber.
Okay.
He's a young guy, almost 18.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got that, you know, that restless energy.
Oh, yeah.
And ambition that you get when you're that age.
Right,
he wants
right.
it all, you know, the apartment, the car, the beautiful girlfriend.
Those classic coming-of-age desires.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Those universal longings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could almost feel how much he wants to, you know, break free from those adolescent constraints and become an adult.
Yeah, and he wants it all now.
Right.
And then, out of nowhere,
he
gets into this fight with a guy named Horatio Dark.
Horatio Dark.
Horatio Dark. I know, right?
The name itself sounds ominous.
Right.
Like the author's hinting at something deeper.
Exactly. So anyway, Horatio insults Lilac.
Lilac.
Yeah, the girl Frederick's completely infatuated with.
Ah, so this is about a girl.
Well, sort of. And Frederick, being the impulsive guy that he is,
he
reacts maybe a little too strongly.
Oh, no.
One punch and Horatio's in a coma.
Wow.
Yeah. Things take a dark turn real fast.
That escalated quickly.
Right. And now Frederick's facing serious legal trouble.
So this one little fight,
mm-hmm.
it's like a catalyst.
Totally.
Setting off this chain of events.
Exactly. And it really makes you think about how one seemingly insignificant moment can completely change the course of your life.
It's a classic literary device, isn't it?
It's like that saying, you know, for want of a nail, the whole kingdom was lost.
And in Frederick's case, it's his whole future hanging in the balance.
Exactly. So what does he do? He tries to impress Lilac by buying this flashy red sports car.
Oh, no.
Really?
I know, right?
A classic try to buy love move.
Yeah, like he thinks that'll solve all his problems.
But it never does it?
Never. And of course, this impulsive purchase just makes things worse.
It always does.
He ends up in even more debt. And guess what?
More trouble.
More legal trouble.
Of course.
But you can kind of understand why he does it right.
Oh, absolutely. He's young and in love and desperate to prove himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that desperation makes him vulnerable.
Right. Which brings us to Edmund Bulge.
Oh, yeah. Bulge, Frederick's lawyer.
Now, there's a character who operates in the moral gray areas.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
He's more interested in profiting from Frederick's situation.
Than actually helping him,
yeah. Right. He's all about the money.
It's a cynical, but sadly realistic portrayal of some parts of the legal system. Right. It's like justice can be bought and sold.
Exactly. And that adds another layer to the story, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So then we meet Horatio's father.
Mr. Dark.
And if Bulge is shady,
Mr. Dark is downright unsettling.
Right. There's this aura of mystery surrounding him.
Mm-hmm. And hints of connections to organized crime.
Yeah, like you never know what he's really up to.
He's a masterfully crafted character.
He is.
He's like a puppet master
pulling
the strings from the shadows.
And you're always wondering what his game is.
Exactly. Is he seeking revenge for his son?
Right.
Or is there something else going on?
It's creepy. He takes this strange interest in Frederick, offering advice and help, but it all feels very calculated.
Like he's trying to manipulate Frederick.
Exactly. And remember, Horatio is still in a coma.
Oh, yeah.
And Mr. Dark takes Frederick to visit him in the hospital.
Interesting. Why would he do that?
It's like this bizarre power move.
Oh, I see.
You know, a way of reminding Frederick who's really in control.
And to taunt him with the consequences of his actions.
Exactly. And then there's Lilac. She's not just some helpless damsel in distress.
Oh.
No, she's complex. She's beautiful and she knows it.
Okay.
And she's not afraid to use that to her advantage.
Interesting. So she's using Frederick.
I think it's more complicated than that. She's pregnant.
Okay.
She's got a strained relationship with her father, and she seems desperate for a better life.
So she sees Frederick as a way out.
Maybe. But she's also manipulative.
Right.
And her demands are constantly increasing.
Which puts even more pressure on Frederick.
Exactly. And it's like she becomes the embodiment of his desires.
Interesting.
And those desires are starting to consume him.
It's a dangerous game they're playing.
Yeah, they are.
Full of desperation and ambition and unattainable dreams.
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that really struck me about this story is the recurring motif of the middle finger.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't really thought about that.
It pops up in several scenes.
Yeah.
And each time it seems to carry a slightly different meaning.
Right? It's like this unspoken language.
Exactly. A raw expression of defiance.
And frustration.
Yeah. Like, it's the only way these characters can really express what they're feeling.
Right. Because words aren't enough.
Exactly. They're trapped in this world where words fail them.
And they resort to this visceral, almost primal gesture.
Yeah. To communicate their anger, their defiance, their sense of being trapped.
And remember, Frederick is caught in this web of deceit.
Right.
He's desperate to keep up appearances.
And meet Lilac's demands.
Which are always increasing.
Speaking of which.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Lilac for a moment.
Okay.
He's not just a passive love interest in this story.
No, she's definitely not.
She's complex.
Yeah.
She's aware of her beauty.
And the power it holds over men.
Exactly. And
right?
She's not afraid to use it.
Right. She's a product of her environment.
Shaped by societal expectations.
And her own dysfunctional family.
It's like she's trying to carve out a space for herself.
In a world that's constantly trying to limit her options.
Exactly. And she's using whatever means she has at her disposal.
But her desires are insatiable.
And they're driving Frederick deeper into this hole he's dug for himself.
It's like a vicious cycle.
The more he tries to grasp those desires,
the further they slip away.
Exactly.
So he turns to people like Bulge for help.
Ah, Bulge the lawyer.
The epitome of moral ambiguity.
He's like a parasite feeding off of Frederick's desperation.
And his naivete.
Exactly. He's all about the quick buck.
And he doesn't care who he hurts along the way.
It's a pretty cynical portrayal of the legal profession.
But it's not entirely unrealistic.
Sadly, no.
And then there's that scene at Heather's birthday party.
Oh, yeah. That was strange.
Bulge takes Frederick there.
Supposedly for a strategy session.
Right. But it ends up being this bizarre, unsettling encounter.
That leaves Frederick even more confused and vulnerable.
Exactly. It's like he's caught in this whirlwind of adult absurdity.
He's surrounded by people who are supposed to be guiding him.
But they're all caught up in their own games.
And their own manipulations.
And Heather herself.
She's a fascinating character.
She's beautiful and seductive.
And completely out of Frederick's league.
And Bulge even suggests that she might be able to influence the judge in Frederick's case.
Using her charms.
Of course, for a price.
Which brings us back to the theme of corruption.
Right. Justice isn't blind.
It can be bought and sold.
And Frederick is desperate enough to consider anything.
Even compromising his own morals.
Exactly. And then there's that terrifying scene at the Bronco Motel and Steakhouse.
Oh, yeah. Things really spiral out of control there.
Frederick takes Lilac there for dinner.
Trying to impress her.
Of course.
But it all goes horribly wrong.
He ends up getting chased by those hooligans.
And his precious red sports car gets trashed.
It's a turning point in the story.
Absolutely.
The violence that's been simmering beneath the surface.
Finally erupts.
And it leaves Frederick both physically and emotionally scarred.
It's also a moment of symbolic significance.
Yes, so.
The red sports car.
The symbol of Frederick's aspirations.
Exactly. It gets destroyed.
Which represents the crushing of his dreams.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And then there's that image of the white bearded man.
The one who was beaten up.
Yeah, but he's still defiantly giving Frederick the middle finger.
Yeah, that image is haunting.
It's a powerful symbol of defiance.
But also of Frederick's powerlessness.
He's caught in this world of violence and chaos.
And he can't escape.
No matter how hard he tries.
And through it all, Mr. Dark is lurking in the background.
Orchestrating everything.
You get the sense that he's enjoying Frederick's suffering.
Like he's getting some kind of twisted satisfaction from it.
And the fact that he involves his own son, Horatio.
It adds another layer of complexity to their relationship.
So with his car destroyed, his debts mounting.
And no closer to winning Lilac's heart.
What does Frederick do?
He goes back to Mr. Dark for help.
Of course. He's desperate.
He has nowhere else to turn.
But Mr. Dark doesn't offer help out of the goodness of his heart.
No, he always has an ulterior motive.
This time he wants Frederick to deliver a mysterious package.
And things take an even darker turn.
The author intentionally leaves the contents of the package ambiguous.
Right.
It could be drugs, weapons, something even worse.
But the point is, it doesn't really matter what's inside.
It's about Frederick being drawn deeper into Mr. Dark's world.
Becoming complicit in his criminal activities.
Frederick hesitates at first.
But Mr. Dark makes it clear that there will be consequences if he refuses.
So he's trapped.
Caught between his desire for freedom.
And the fear of Mr. Dark's retribution.
It raises the question, is Frederick really making choices?
Or is he just reacting to the forces around him?
Is he a victim of circumstance? Or is he contributing to his own downfall?
And then there's that heart-stopping moment when Frederick tries to escape from Mr. Dark's house.
Only to be chased down the street by Mr. Dark with a baseball bat.
It's like something out of a nightmare.
It's a visceral representation of the danger Frederick is in.
And Mr. Dark's willingness to use violence to maintain control. Frederick turns to Bulge for help.
But Bulge is no help at all.
He tells Frederick to man up and deal with it himself.
Which just highlights how isolated Frederick is.
He has no one to turn to.
No one who understands what he's going through.
And Lilac.
She's completely oblivious.
To the risks Frederick has taken.
And the sacrifices he's made.
For their supposed love.
She's consumed by her own desires.
Demanding more and more.
Pushing him closer and closer to the edge.
So we're back and diving deeper into Frederick's world. Amor Fati, remember?
Yeah, where we left off, things were pretty bleak for him.
Yeah, he had lost pretty much everything, right? The car, his apartment, any financial security he had.
Yeah, and it seems like his sense of morality is starting to slip, too.
Yeah, and that recurring image, we keep seeing the middle finger.
Right.
It comes back in this last part.
Oh.
Yeah, after the fight at the Bronco Motel and Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the white-bearded guy?
The one who's beaten up?
Yeah, Frederick sees him again, all battered and bruised.
Wow.
But he's still raising that middle finger.
It's like he's refusing to be broken.
Yeah, it's powerful, but it's also really unsettling.
I think it speaks to this underlying theme of defiance,
yeah,
but also of powerlessness.
Like no matter what life throws at him.
He's still going to flip at the bird.
Exactly. But it's a losing battle, right?
It seems that way.
And then the violence escalates even further.
What happens?
Well, Mr. Dark decides to take revenge.
On the hooligans who trashed Frederick's car.
Yeah, it's brutal. And he even gives Frederick a bat.
Oh, wow.
Almost like he's inviting him to participate.
So Frederick actually takes part in the violence.
He does. And it's like a turning point for him.
Right. He crosses a line.
Yeah, he becomes complicit in Mr. Dark's world.
It's scary how easily he succumbs to that influence.
It's like Mr. Dark is molding him.
Into a younger version of himself.
Exactly. And what's really disturbing is how detached Mr. Dark is from it all.
Like violence is just a tool to him?
Yeah, he doesn't even flinch.
It's chilling.
But even after all this, Frederick still wants to be with Lilac.
Really? After everything she's put him through?
Yeah, he goes to her father, Mr. Johnson.
What for?
He wants help getting a better apartment.
Like he thinks that will win Lilac over.
Yeah, but Mr. Johnson is no better than the rest of them.
What do you mean?
He manipulates Frederick.
Oh.
He pretends to be sympathetic.
Oh, wow.
But he's just using Frederick for his own amusement.
So Frederick is completely alone.
Pretty much everyone he's trusted has betrayed him.
That's rough.
It is. And Lilac is completely oblivious to it all.
Still focused on her own desires.
Yeah, it's like Frederick is sacrificing everything for a love that doesn't even exist.
So where does that leave him?
Well, the novel ends with Frederick completely lost.
He's lost his car, his apartment, his money, his friends.
And maybe even himself.
He's embraced this idea of amor fati, a love of fate.
But it's twisted and distorted.
He's surrounded by darkness.
And it's not clear if he'll ever find his way out.
And the fact that the novel is unfinished,
it just adds to the mystery.
Right. It makes you wonder what happens to Frederick.
Does he continue down this path of destruction?
Or does he somehow manage to break free?
We'll never know for sure.
But I think that's part of the power of this story.
Yeah, it makes you think.
About the choices we make.
And the forces that shape our lives.
It's a story that stays with you long after you finish reading it.
Well, this has been quite a deep dive.
It has.
We've gone deep into the world of Amor Fati.
And the tragic story of Frederick Weber.
We've encountered complex characters, unsettling themes.
And a powerful examination of the human psyche.
What resonated most with you?
I think it's the idea that even in the darkest of times,
there's always a flicker of hope.
And the choices we make determine whether that hope will grow or be extinguished.
This has been The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us.
And remember, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep those middle fingers down.
We'll see you next time.